kwakuwankwamnyako nauvuku naundukufu ata milele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and welcome to episode 13 of Radio Harambe, the official podcast of JamboEveryone.com and the unofficial podcast of Disney's Animal Kingdom. I am Dave McBride, coming to you from the Radio Harambe studios. And joining me from somewhere in the world, a man who once spent a week in a Cameroonian hospital after falling out of a kapok tree while trying to imitate the behaviors of a colobus monkey, it's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you?
Jambo, Dave, how are you? I'm in the Una Biological Reserve.
Okay.
It is an Atlantic coast of Brazil. It's a part of the Atlantic Forest, one of the most endangered habitats in the world. It's also where the Golden Lion Tamarin is from, but we're here studying the maned three-toed sloth.
A sloth has a mane?
Yeah, this one, it's much darker than the sloth, the three-toed sloth that you see in, you know, most zoos. It's also bigger. It is the largest of the sloths.
Wow. So I guess it's slothy.
Yeah, it's a mane of black hair, essentially.
Very cool. All right, on this show, we're going to talk about all the news from the Animal Kingdom and the rest of Walt Disney World. And then in our feature section, we will turn the spotlight over to conservation as we talk to Fernanda Hong, who is the co-director of the ARA Project, an organization who are on the ground in Costa Rica fighting to save endangered macaws. But let's start with the news. We'll start with the local news. I'm actually going to begin with a different conservation story. And on Wednesday, October 16th, so just a couple weeks ago, the Cheetah Conservation Fund, one of our conservation partners, suffered a really big blow. There was a fire that destroyed their visitor center building in Namibia. It was caused by a bolt of lightning hit the building's thatched roof. No animals or people were hurt, but I mention this because obviously after suffering a blow like this to an organization of this kind, they could obviously use our help. So I would just like to point you over to our conservation page at JamboEveryone.com. Click the conservation link. You can find the link straight to them, or you can visit the CCF directly. Make a donation by going to their website, cheetah.org. So I just wanted to get that one out of the way, Mike.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's really not much to add about that. It's a shame that they had to, you know, such an issue, but there's really not much more to say, but other than please help them out.
Yep. And first bit of news from the Animal Kingdom is the big sign is back. Now, you remember a couple of weeks ago, maybe as much as a month ago or so, we reported that that big green Animal Kingdom sign that is on outside of the turnstiles, even all the way up, like on the road down from the bus depot. If you're coming in from the cars from the parking lot, you really don't see it, I don't think, unless you see it when you're coming off the tram. I've never done that. Believe it
you
or not.
You do not.
Okay. So it's just a bus depot thing, but it's a big, beautiful sign that everybody loved to take their picture in front of. Well, it went away for a little while and nobody knew why. Nobody knew what was going to happen. Well, it's back. And it looks like really all they did was change the bus info on the back, which is kind of weird because if you look at the way that the sign is designed, Mike, it actually looks like it's made so that they can just kind of slide bus info in and out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Right. It looks like somebody could just walk out there and change it within a matter of a few minutes.
Right. I mean, maybe it got a new coat of paint or something, but I think what we were all expecting was some sort of, if it came back, was some sort of change or update to the logo in front of it.
The dragon.
Right. And we all assumed that if it returned, it would do so without the dragon and perhaps with the addition of a big blue alien or, you know, or something like that. But nope.
Banshee.
Right. It looks exactly the same. And the Beastly Kingdom crowd still have their ammunition. And you actually saw it back, right? I think it actually came back when you were there.
Yeah, I saw it. We drove most of the time, almost all the time, we drove to the Animal Kingdom. So I had to go out of my way to go see if it was still there. And it was, I mean, well, you could see that it's there from right. walking in from the car thing. But, you know, I ran over just to see what it was, that different at all.
Right, right.
It's not different. And, you know, there's a couple of pictures on our website showing what it looks like. But they had to change the buses around a little bit. I know they changed the busing a little bit.
Right.
They added the downtown Disney bus and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
I also want to make note before we go on to the next thing that some of these stories might be a little bit old. If you remember our last show, we did not do a news section because we went with just the new announcement stuff. Go back to that if you want to hear more about Avatar and the new Disney nighttime stuff. So if we're kind of glossing over that while we're going through these other news stories, we certainly have not glossed over those two things.
Yeah.
So head back to episode 12 to read about that whole announcement weekend there. The next thing I have for us is we have some more. We have FastPass Plus kiosks added. Now, from what I can understand of this, as the FastPass Plus system kind of continues to evolve, it seems that Disney has recognized that not everybody in the park is going to be carrying around a tablet or a smartphone so they can access and change their reservations while they're actually on vacation. So in response to that, the parks have been getting kiosks with computer screens basically just for this purpose. It looks like the Animal Kingdom will be getting these kiosks at guest relations, Disney Outfitters, the Cali River Rapids around that area, Primeval Whirl, and it looks like in the Expedition Everest Fast Pass distribution area. Are there other ones? I don't know if there's other ones currently there now.
I don't know if they should add one in Harambe.
I was just going to say that, but my thought is that there must be one there. That may have been one of the first ones that came in. I just don't remember because I haven't used the system yet while I'm there, so I'm not really up on what kind of changes have been made.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I did not use any of the kiosks that were there. I think I saw one by Haunted Mansion, maybe.
Right.
I don't remember, but I have a smartphone, so
exactly.
It's so easy to do it with the smartphone. I mean, there was one day we were actually in Animal Kingdom where we decided we had fast passes for like Dinosaur and Primeval World just because the kids love it, and it was our last day there and we wanted to make sure we were gonna go on those rides,
right?
And we went to Rafiki's Planet Watch, and we were doing the Wilderness Explorer, so we're gonna need a little time with the Rafiki's Planet Watch. So I was a little concerned that our fast passes would run out. Got on my smartphone, switched them for like 2 hours later. It was no problem whatsoever. So if you have a smartphone, if you have a tablet, it's so easy to move around your fast passes from there.
Or control.
But if you don't, you're going to have to run into these kiosks. Presumably, it's just as easy to do it from those, but I can't really help you with that.
I am looking at my Disney Experience app on my smartphone right now for my upcoming trip, and right now, I can't actually tell for 2 days of the trip what fast passes I actually have and don't have. Because in its infinite wisdom, this app has, when I was making changes, I didn't know this was happening until after I was done, when I was making little tweaks here and there, it actually saved each little tweak on my front page. So now I have like 12 or 13 fast passes for one day and 8 or 9 for another before I figured out what was going wrong. And
weird.
It has not fixed itself. I can't seem to get it to fix itself. And I don't really know for sure what fast passes I have and don't have. So I guess I'm going to have to find that out somehow or just ignore the system altogether. That was my next thought. I was just going to go in and erase everything I have and just not use it because obviously I don't have any faith in it at this point. But, you know, that's where I am. I don't think the kiosk is going to help either. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the only other issue I had with it directed me to a kiosk. Splash Mountain went down. Splash Mountain kept going down when I was there.
Yeah.
So it would send me an email, my Magic Plus, to tell me that it was down and that I could change it to, you know, any one of these numerous items, you know, or different attractions, and I could pick pretty much any time I wanted, or I can return to Splash Mountain any time during that day that I wanted to, as long as it reopened. So,
right.
I mean, you don't have a smartphone or whatever to get that email. You might not actually know that either. So You know, it's definitely geared toward people who have having the kiosks. You know, if you don't have a smartphone or a tablet or something along those lines, you're definitely at a disadvantage.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, even if you do have one, you may be at something of a disadvantage. Yeah, well,
I'm assuming once they get the kinks worked out, you won't be as much. But yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really even know at this point what to do. I guess what I'll probably end up doing is either going to guest relations or just calling before I go down there and talk about it. I have no idea. But anyway, neither here nor there. Here's a weird one. This goes back to last week. Goes back actually to October 18th. Here's one, Mike. I just want to throw out at you. On October 18th, I don't know if you noticed this, but during the day, they changed the park hours from closing at 6 to closing at 7.
Right.
Does that happen a lot?
Yeah, it happens quite a bit.
And why would they change it in the course of the day? Just out of capacity?
Yeah.
Because I have noticed that over the last couple of weeks, yes, that Animal Kingdom park hours are kind of expanding a little bit more than they usually do at this time of year.
Yeah, but not only that, but sort of on the fly, they added extra hours to Hollywood Studios one of these days, these last week, and actually added an extra performance of Fantasmic. So it's obviously a little bit more crowded than they had initially anticipated.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably it. The next thing is coming up just this week. It's Animal Kingdom has this sort of Halloween tradition of celebrating Bat Day on October 31st. And here is the official description from the Disney Parks blog, Mike's favorite blog. On Halloween, we're celebrating Bat Day with special activities at Rafiki's Planet Watch, where guests will discover that bats are cool, not creepy. I kind of think they're both. Guests can enter a bat cave and test their skills at identifying North American bats. Fun games help guests learn what bats eat and what challenges they face. Guests also can meet our bat keepers and find out how we can care for the bats that make their home on the Maharaja Jungle Trek in Disney's Animal Kingdom. I might also even see one of our bats getting its wellness exam in the veterinary hospital. So we always like these things, and I always like to mention them.
Yeah, I don't see why cool and creepy is mutually exclusive.
I don't either.
Yeah. Often creepy is very cool, but
yeah.
Yeah, I do like these particular days, and having Bat Day on Halloween is fun.
Yeah,
you know, most people I don't think of going to the animal if they're there for Halloween. They probably don't really think of going to the Animal Kingdom for that particular day, but why not? I mean, you probably are doing Mickey's Not So Scary one other night. You know, go to the Animal Kingdom, enjoy Bat Day, learn about bats, and talking to the keepers is kind of cool. I like that kind of idea.
Yeah, well, you know, if I were there on Halloween, I would go to Bat Day. Why not? I would want nothing to do with the Magic Kingdom on that day.
No. I wouldn't either.
Stay as far away as possible.
The day of the week is Halloween this year?
Thursday, I think. Wednesday or Thursday. I think it's Thursday.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I think it's Thursday. So I don't know. I don't know what has extra magic hours that day or not, but yeah, go to Animal Kingdom.
The next story kind of builds upon a little bit of what we said last week about the Avatar project. In an article by Arthur Levine, who I just discovered actually through this, he writes about theme parks for the website about.com. And he had an interview with Joe Rohde, and Rohde gave kind of just a tiny insight into the Avatar e-ticket being built on what we consider to be a Soarin-style ride platform. This isn't much information, but I think it's kind of cool to pass along in regards to this whole conversation we're having. Here's a quote from the posting. Rohde said that there might be some similarities, but that the Avatar attraction will be, quote, considerably more thrilling than Soarin and incorporate some new groundbreaking features. Just kind of helps to sort of clarify that we're not getting like the Soarin'. We're not getting a much of a copy of Soarin', it seems like.
Right. It's not going to be soaring over Pandora.
Exactly.
But I mean, I the descriptions they use are that you're going to be, you know, flying a Banshee over Pandora, right? I mean, isn't that basically what?
Yes.
The promotion. I mean, the Soarin' ride vehicle is probably a poor choice of words, but I would think that the ride vehicle or whatever for this particular attraction will be much more small. Will be much smaller than the one at Soarin'. I mean, at Soarin', there's these large groups,
huge
dangling. Yeah. To get the feel of being on a Banshee, you would almost have to be in single, double, or perhaps 4 to 6 people in one little thing.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And you know, and not to get into speculation too much, but man, does that sound like a crowd nightmare? That sounds like a capacity nightmare.
Well, if you look at the leaked plans, I mean, there are 4 different pods or you know, screens or whatever. I mean, Soarin' has what, 2?
Yes.
I mean, if Soarin' doubled its capacity, that would be, you know, that would be nice. So I'm assuming they're going to, you know, I'm assuming they're going to build a lot more capacity than what Soarin' currently has, I would assume.
Right.
I just don't know how they're going to, I mean, is it going to be a whole bunch of smaller, quote unquote, Banshees, all on one big screen? I mean, I don't know. It would be interesting to see.
Yeah.
They couldn't possibly have one humongous IMAX screen for just 4 people at a time.
I wouldn't think so. Yeah, I wouldn't think so. The only thing that you can think of is, like, you know, you'd have one IMAX screen with a whole bunch of ride vehicles.
Yeah, we'll just call them Banshees for now.
Yeah, kind of all in the same, you know, kind of riding alongside each other.
Right, right. So, you know, we'll see.
And finally, I want to go over a couple of rumors, Mike, just because some of these have been making the rounds. I just kind of comment a little bit on some of them, and they're all sort of related to this big change coming to the Animal Kingdom in the next couple of years. There's a few that I've heard, I'll just run them all down for you. One we've heard, and this one is the one that I have kind of on the best information. This is one of the 3 that I would say is probably true, which is that, and I mentioned this a little bit in the last podcast, but we didn't have time to talk about it much, which is that the Jammin' Jungle Parade may be coming to an end as early as this year. As early as the end of this year, which leads me to believe that it might be, we would do the Jingle Jungle layover, followed by a cancellation of the parade. I have no information on it being replaced. We've heard nothing on that at all. But I have heard that is a very good possibility that that is going to go away. The other 2, which I have less information on, we've heard, actually this one has some sources that other people have picked this up too, which is that Camp Minnie Mickey will be closing sooner than we thought, sometime in 2014. We thought that maybe it might stick around for a little bit. And the significance behind this one is that we thought that the Festival of the Lion King would be... This is all kind of related, because the next one I was going to say is that the Festival of the Lion King is closing for what we think might be a matter of 6 months. So you can see why those 2 are related. So we're talking about Camp Minnie Mickey closure coming in 2014... possibly meaning that the Festival of the Lion King Theater will close before the new one is open. So take those where you will. I don't know which one you want to comment on first, Mike.
Let's talk about the parade first.
Okay.
There's really not too much to say about that. I mean, I for one, like the Jammin' Jungle Parade. Like I think I said this on the last show. I'm not going to shed too many tears about the loss of a parade. I'm not really a parade guy. I know at the Hollywood Studios, they have pretty much canceled their parade there so that there's really no afternoon parade. I'm not sure if this is sort of a thing now so that the Magic Kingdom is the only one that is gonna have an afternoon parade. You know, the nighttime show, from what we can understand of it, is going to be a parade of sorts. So maybe that's going to be the only parade they really want there. I mean, they don't want to clog up the Discover Island twice, you know, 2 times in a day. Who knows?
Right.
And then you also have the issue of, you know, where do those floats go? I mean, where does all that stuff go? I guess it's somewhere behind the Pizza Safari, because that's where they come out. There is back there, if you go back a little bit and then over the water, there are buildings back there. I don't think that area is part of what will eventually be Avatar because it's kind of far off from that.
It could be, though.
I guess
it's that side of the park.
It is that side of the park, but the Avatar from Camp Mini Mickey is before that. I mean, it's, you know, south of that if you're looking at a map.
Yeah, but I would have to look at a map in order to really be able to say to myself, or an overhead view to be able to say to myself whether or not it would be needed simply for the construction of Avatar as well. I mean,
That's the other thing. I mean, maybe they need that area for to hold construct. I mean, who knows? I mean, part of the thing they talk about the Hollywood studios is they got rid of the parade is because where they keep the floats for that parade was right behind Star Tours, and you know everybody presumes that Star Tours land is going to take over that spot, you know, all that kind of nonsense.
Right.
So maybe this does have something to do with they'll need that space to start construction on Pandora. I mean, who knows? But those are all possibilities.
But we're both in agreement that it's sad to see it go, but we're not going to stage a protest.
No, and we'll see if, you know, maybe someday they're going to bring back another parade. Who knows?
Right. And now the next one, the Camp Mini Mickey Festival of the Lion King thing. I'll say this real quickly, just to kind of clarify. I feel that the information that was going out is that Camp Mini Mickey is going to close in 2014, possibly in early 2014, to which that's one of those things where you say, uh-huh, of course, we know that, because we do know that. So,
well, I mean, they're going to have to put shovels in the dirt for Avatar Land at some point.
Yeah, soon. Yeah, right. So we know that. The only kind of thing that you heard sort of as a separate rumor was this Festival of the Lion King thing. I'm not going to stand by that. I'm only just reporting it because it's been out there quite a bit, and I thought we might at least comment on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I am really starting to believe that there's more going on behind those walls in Harambe than just a theater. I mean, we've talked about this in the past. Clearly, I think there's at the very least, you know, probably another food spot, but maybe more importantly, water viewing areas for the eventual Rivers of Light. I mean, they're going to build places where you can see stuff and all that, you know, watch the parade that they're eventually putting up there. You know, and I think, you know, if they're going to expand the park hours and add, you know, the Rivers of Light, add Avatar Land, add all that kind of stuff, they're going to need to increase shopping and food spots. So the rumors that I've heard that there's going to be at least two merchandise spots, at least one counter service, and at least a sit-down restaurant all back there with Festival of the Lion King very well may be true. That'll take some time to build. So maybe there will be a time where you will have, you know, 3 to 6 months of no Festival of the Lion King just because they want to start putting, as I said, shovels in the ground in Avatar Land. And it's just not ready to put that theater up and put Festival of the Lion King and everything else they want to wrap around it up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it makes sense. Because at first it makes sense to me that they need to close it for a small amount of time because they're not going to buy all the equipment. They're going to move the stuff from one theater to another.
Absolutely.
And they're going to need time to rehearse in that theater. But when you put it that way, when you talk about these other things that we're starting to hear trickle in now, I mean, this is going to take a while. We all know that now the building process with Disney is like turning the Titanic. It just doesn't happen right away. You know, now I see. My first thought was, I don't believe this. Why would they do that? They could just finish one and move the other. But now they're not just finishing one. So
yeah. And the other thing that I heard, and I think it was WDW fanboys, I think were the first people to say this, was that the cast members who are the performers at Festival of the Lion King have been told that they are at least are not. They'll have to re-audition for the new show because it is going to change to some degree. It's not going to be the same exact show. Not sure if I believe that either, but that is out there.
Well, we're often told reports of what cast members have been told.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Including this. I mean, this was we heard that this was going to close, I think, in January, wasn't it? We were told by cast members that this was going to close this time last year.
Correct.
So, All right, so that's the local news. We're going to take a short break, come back with the world news on Radio Harambe in just a second.
Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jumbo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to jumboeveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife?
Welcome back to Radio Harambe. I am Dave McBride along with Safari Mike, and it is time for Mike to bring us the world news, the news from the rest of the Walt Disney World. Mike, what do we got this week?
Well, first, let's go to Disney Springs, where construction and the nightmare that is there, and you know, someday soon, perhaps you will see what's going on down at downtown Disney right now. But it is a mess of parking, and they're building actually going to build some pedestrian bridges that cross over Bona Vista Drive. That's going to be part of the Disney Springs expansion. It'll actually take you to the cast member car parking lot, which is on the opposite side of the road. I don't know if you last time you've been down there, but there is a major cast member building on the across the street.
Yeah,
and you also often see cast members, you know, trying to cross the road there at Bona Vista Drive, which is a basically a highway at this point with so many
right.
people on it and so many lanes. So they're building pedestrian bridges, and I know that for at least a little while, that's going to open that up to the public so that they can park at the cast members.
Right.
They'll provide shuttle service over there, but you also may be able to walk over there as well.
First of all, this is the first time I've ever heard somebody refer to it as Disney Springs without first referring to it as Downtown Disney. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't know what you're talking about at first. I thought you were talking about a golf course. So it did take me a second to adjust to what Disney Springs was. I think that's going to be a little bit of a learning curve for all of us. But the other thing is, we've discussed many times what a mess this is going to be and is right now. And it sounds like that march to a disaster just keeps on moving.
Yeah, we were there. We actually went there twice, once in the late afternoon to drop off Brooke, my wife, and my daughter for, they actually met Zendaya. I know you're a big fan of Zendaya, but she was down there at Downtown Disney.
Is it she? Oh,
yes. And the other time we went there for Raglan Road, and we were there.
That I know.
Yeah, we were there relatively early, 5:30 or so. And parking is just a nightmare even at then. It was like during it was a Sunday at 5:30, and it was just terrible.
Once
the parks start getting really crowded as we get closer and closer to Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Oh, God, can you imagine?
And the locals will be there to shop for
can
Christmas.
Can you imagine? My it's God.
It's going to be an absolute disaster.
I've actually sort of pledged to do my best to avoid it until all of this is done, because I don't really go there very often anyway. There's not really much there for me, I'll be honest. Sometimes I can't avoid that. So if I'm there, I'll take plenty of pictures and do plenty of whining. So follow us on Twitter.
Yeah, I've determined I really don't. We were there for a little bit, but right now, Downtown Disney doesn't really nothing for me.
No, I have no reason to ever go there. The only reason why I ever have in the past few years is because it's a kind of an easy place to meet friends or relatives that are locals.
Oh,
so,
sure.
So I've gone there a couple of times for that, and I'll probably end up doing that again this year. But I have no, there's no reason to go there. I mean, when there once was a time where you would go there to find items and things that you can't find in other places, that's over with. You can find everything they sell there. You can find almost anywhere now. You can find
Back in the old days, you know, when Epcot was the park that closed last at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, that you'd go there to drink.
Parks were closing at 8 o'clock or whatever. It was always something to do at night.
Go there, party. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I stay at Epcot or you know, Magic Kingdom late. I mean, that's what we pretty much did every night. We were either at one of those two parks at night. So, I mean, I really just, or you know, there's so many resorts I'd rather hang out at. I mean, if I was staying at the Animal Kingdom Lodge, I'd rather hang out there.
It's true too. Yep. Absolutely. So. What's next?
Speaking of resorts, as of October 23rd, so just a couple days before you're getting this podcast, the Grand Floridian Villas are officially open and receiving guests. And as far as I know, there have yet to be any complaints, which is a little bit different than when Bay Lake Tower opened. But, you know, hopefully people are enjoying it. It looks nice, I guess, but it is open and receiving guests.
Okay.
Not a fan?
No, I
don't like the Grand Floridian.
I don't like the Grand Floridian either. I don't either. And I certainly wouldn't pay to go there. The point structure for DVC is, it is what it is. I mean, there's just other options. You know, you're paying for a 5-star resort and you're not getting a 5-star resort. So. I'm sorry. You're not. You're getting
a 6-star resort.
You're paying for a better than 5-star resort, and you're getting maybe a 4. It's a good resort. It's pretty. It's nice. It's got some decent places to eat. It's just not. There's nothing. It doesn't have any wow factor to me. It just
doesn't have the personality of the Polynesian.
It has no personality.
Or the Animal Kingdom Lodge. Yeah. Or, you know, we just stayed at the Wilderness Lodge for the first time. I loved it. You know, that place has a lot of personality. It's very enjoyable. I would much rather stay at one of those three resorts just off the top of my head.
But it's not on the monorail line, and that's what DVC's going after, so that's what we're getting from now on. So,
well, they're running out of resorts to put the DVCs on their monorail line.
Sooner or later, they're just going to all be DVCs on the monorail line. They're going to build one at the Transportation and Ticket Center.
Yeah. Well, they're building the Poly. What else they got?
There you go. Right smack dab on top of the Transportation and Ticket Center.
The TTC resort? Yeah, maybe.
There's plenty of room to build in the parking lot at the Contemporary.
You know, by the time they finish the Polynesian DVC, the monorail will be broken anyway.
That's true. I don't know why they're investing in it. What's next?
That was awfully snarky.
Yeah, well, but it's true. Move along. Move along.
All right. Well, I got a couple of related stories, both to Magic Bands and My Magic Plus. Magic Bands, as we get closer and closer to this becoming the norm, they are replacing the Key to the World cards as your primary resort ID. Also, the Magic Bands are going to be used for Extra Magic Hour park entry starting very soon. I can tell you that I used my Magic Band, talking about the Extra Magic Hours first, I used my Magic Band to get in the parks early several times, and they did not ask for a resort ID or anything like that. They just let me go through, mostly because if you had a Magic Band, you were staying at a Disney resort.
Yeah, of course. Because
that's the only people who are testing it.
But I can't believe that information wouldn't be on the RFID track.
Well, here's the weird thing. We were at, I guess it was Epcot late. We were there... for the late night from 9 to 11. And we watched Illuminations, and then we wanted to go on Maelstrom. And we had our Magic Bands. By the way, still only resort testing Magic Bands. But the cast member insisted on seeing all of our resort IDs to get in, which didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Maybe he just wanted to give you a hard time.
Well, we had them, fortunately. But there was a couple next to us that did not have them, and they didn't let her... How do you not let them in the ride at that
Have
point?
A magical day.
But then we went to a different... where did we go? We went to Mission Space, or we went up front to Future World for a couple of rides. Not an issue at all. So even the cast members were very kind of, you know, very different as on their takes of Extra Magic Hours. Or who can get on. So, but apparently it's going to be for everybody soon. And once guests who are not resort people are getting these Magic Bands, I guess we'll see if it actually works. Now, in terms of the My Magic Plus as your key to your resort, that was not an issue at all for the Animal Kingdom Lodge, but when we switched to the Wilderness Lodge, part of the problem was the Wilderness Lodge actually hadn't been, they hadn't rolled it out yet as part of the testing phase. It was like the day after we left, they were starting to roll out. But theoretically, we should still be able to use our magic bands to get in the room. It did not work at all.
You and your theories.
Yeah, for everybody but me. It worked for me, but only for day one. It worked. I could open the door the first day we were there, first night we were there. Every day after that, it didn't work.
Then it went on the fritz.
I don't know what happened. Yeah. We had to use our key to the world card thereafter. I mean, the guy basically told me that we could reprogram everything, and if you want to stay here for 45 minutes, or I could just print out these cards. I could print out the cards.
That was code for, I really don't know how to reprogram this, so please take the cards.
He was going to get somebody to help him because, hopefully they're getting all these kinks worked out, but, we'll see.
I don't have any evidence to that, but okay.
Yeah, you don't. All right, next one?
Yes.
All right, Talking Mickey. I don't know if you've ever seen him, but I actually think this is pretty incredible. The Mickey Mouse that will come up to you and actually talk to you.
Yeah,
and
this is awesome.
Is there at the in the Magic Kingdom doing meet and greets on Main Street, right next to Tony's Town Square, restaurant and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. The theater there. If you take a look at the video of it, it's really cool that they, and in theory, once the magic bands are really rocking and rolling, he will be programmed, but they will be able to. Have your children's information so Mickey Mouse can say hello, little Jimmy, or hello, whatever, as you walk it in. And I think that would be really magical for especially for a little kid, or even for this 43-year-old kid.
Right.
They're really cool. The Talking Mickey is really amazing. And I hope they carry this on to some of the other, meet and greets, throughout the parks.
Yeah, it does. It does. It looks fantastic. I agree with you 100%. This is a really cool piece of technology.
It is. It is.
It's very really exciting stuff. And it's the future of this. And and this is the beginning of it. So if it works and they can make it affordably, you're going to see this a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope it works. I hope that, I hope we see a lot more of it.
Speaking of character initiative, the living character thing, the difference in did I read that Remy is leaving the Chefs de France?
Yeah, apparently he's gone.
He's gone, or he's leaving soon. He's gone.
I thought he was gone. Like, I thought he just left.
Why would you get rid of that?
I don't know. Is he going to one of the cruise boats? I honestly I don't know.
Well, isn't there one of the boats may have one called Remy's.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and there's no way they can build two, so.
They're also building a whole big Remy section in Disneyland Paris.
Cool. Definitely. He's going to go to the other places where he's more needed. Yeah, where he'll sell more plush.
Be honest, I have no real reason to go to Chefs de France before, now that they took Remy out, and I really have no reason to go there. I know we're digressing here, but to me, that might be the worst restaurant at World Showcase.
Oh, you're crazy.
You like it?
I do like it. I wouldn't say I love it, but it is not the worst restaurant in World Showcase.
What's worse?
Oh, boy. Have you ever been in Nine Dragons?
No, not in like 20 years.
So, yeah, it's a lot worse.
That could be. I haven't been there since they redid it about 3 or 4 years ago, whatever it was. So
I would say Le Chefs de France is on par with the other sort of older ones that are there, like Rose and Crown.
I've never eaten in Rose and Crown. I've never eaten in there.
Yeah, it's a lot like that. I mean, there's Nine Dragons, which is the Pits, and then there are some of the new ones, which are exciting, and then there are the old ones that have been there forever that really aren't, that haven't really evolved much, that are cool. Of those, really only St. Angel is one that I really like, only because of the ambiance in there, but all the rest of them, I'm sorry,
I'd rather eat at St. Angel any day.
Yeah, but like Le Chef's and the Rose and Crown and Beer Garden.
I'd rather eat at Beer Garden.
I wouldn't.
Oh, I would.
I wouldn't.
I'm in the minority here. I know that.
Yeah, no, I know, and it's I would. It's my point isn't that one is very much better than the other. I just think that they're not. There's not much difference between them. They're just
not French food. I mean, it's really not French food.
But no, whatever. No, it's not. But
we're digressing. We're going way off topic.
You're not really going to start me on that, are you?
Somehow we were talking about the Talking Mickey in Main Street, and it ended up debating on what's worse, Chefs de France or Beer Garden.
Right.
I don't know how that happened.
Yeah. And let's not get started on whether or not they're actually accurate in their portrayals of ethnic food, but go ahead.
Judging by how this show is going so far, this will probably degenerate into a conversation about the film quality of Soren.
Okay, but good.
The last news story I have is the Jungle Cruise is going to receive a holiday overlay and to become the Jingle Cruise. Have you read about this one?
I have.
I understand, it is essentially, I mean, the idea is the Jungle Cruise skippers have become homesick because they're not home for the holidays. And to cheer themselves up, the queue and the boathouse are going to have decorations that, you know, their families have sent them or they made themselves from stuff from around the Jungle Cruise.
Right.
The skippers are going to change the spiel so that there's more of a holiday, you know, the jokes will be more holiday oriented.
Good.
The boats apparently are going to be renamed with the holidays in mind. I don't know if that means, like, I don't know, the Slippery Santa or whatever. I have no idea. And apparently there'll be holiday songs played softly in the radio broadcast playing in the background. This, to me, I mean, I don't really care about it. That's fine. I mean, they want to do an overlay. That's fine. The interesting thing, it's actually at Walt Disney World. Usually this is Disneyland that gets these things. But the ones you get at Disneyland currently, like the Nightmare Before Christmas overlay at the Haunted Mansion, or the, what is it, Ghosts in the Galaxy or whatever it's uh-huh. called, at Space Mountain. I mean, if you take a look at those look, you know, freaking cool.
Right, right. And very comprehensive.
Oh, yeah. The Nightmare Before Christmas thing at the Haunted Mansion is amazing. I don't know if you've ever seen a ride view, a ride through video.
Uh-huh.
This just seems like a little tweaking.
Yeah.
It's not really what those other things are.
Right.
I'm just kind of surprised they're doing it at Walt Disney World. They've always been kind of, I guess, reluctant to change Walt Disney World because the people in Disneyland are people who go all the time.
Right.
They look forward to these overlays.
Right.
The Walt Disney World crowd generally is people who are there every 3 or 4 years. And if you screw around with a ride that they love, like Haunted Mansion or
perhaps pitch a fit.
Yeah, they pitch a fit. Like, what happened to the Jungle Cruise? Where's, you know, Trader Sam's? I mean, why is he wearing, you know, garland around his neck? I mean, that's not what I remember as a kid.
Right.
Last time I was here. So I'm surprised that they're doing it a little bit at Walt Disney World, but I'm happy. And hopefully this means that maybe they won't be so reluctant to do it at Disney World from now on.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think the whole thing's kind of silly. I mean, there was a furor over this, however you say that word. there was a firestorm over this, and it really didn't need to be. There's not, you know, there's really not much to this. I don't know why you would even create an attraction that is run on the backs of a person, an actor, and not change it occasionally,
mm-hmm.
you know, to freshen it up. I mean, what's the point? You might as well put a robot in there. You know, that's why you have a human being on there, because you want to have some spontaneity and some change. So I like the fact that they're doing that. It does seem very, very, let me put it this way. I think it's kind of neat. I'm not excited about it. I don't care if I get to see it or not, but I think it's kind of cool that they came up with a story and are doing just a quick little thing, you know, just for what appears to be no other reason than they can, you know, it's not there to sell any extra t-shirts. It's not there to run up some characters into a plush, you know, for the stores. It's just there because they can. And I like that.
Yeah, it's a little fun.
It's a little fun.
I hope this leads them to saying, hey, why don't we do the Nightmare Before Christmas overlay at Haunted Mansion? Because that's something I might actually say, you know, maybe we should make a trip in November to see that, because that looks awesome. Or, you know, stuff like that. I hope they're not as reluctant after this. Hopefully this is relatively well received once it's out there and, you know, that...
And well executed.
and well executed. Yeah. It is a lot more subdued than some of the other ones, like the Nightmare Before Christmas thing. But hopefully, I'm for it.
I think some tastefully placed holiday lights, Christmas lights somewhere in and around there, especially at night, would be really cool. It'd be a neat looking attraction.
Yeah, it looks like they're not even, from what it sounds like, there's not changing anything with the ride anyway. It's mostly about the queue and the boathouse and the boats themselves.
It'll look nice.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
So that's it?
That's it.
All right, we're going to take another break here. And when we come back, we will have my interview that I did with Fernanda Hong. She is the co-director of the Arrow Project, an organization in Costa Rica who are fighting to conserve macaws. And so we listen to that interview right after this short break on Radio Harambe.
Come on, gang. Let's take it home.
If you're like me, you're an Animal Kingdom fan who is just a bit tired of listening to so-called Disney experts who criticize our beloved park for being a, quote, half-day park. Well, it's time to put your frustrations into action by going to the Jumbo Everyone store at Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone and picking up one of our exclusive new Not a Half-Day Park t-shirts. They look great, and we will donate 50% of the profits to our conservation partners. The rest of it will go to helping keep Radio Harambe on the air and JomboEveryone.com on the web. Wear it the next time you visit the parks, or even better, the next time you attend a Disney fan meetup. Go to Zazzle.com/JomboEveryone today and wear your Animal Kingdom pride for all to see. And welcome back to Radio Harambe. I am Dave McBride, coming to you from the Radio Harambe studios, and speaking to me all the way from Costa Rica, which I'll tell you is far away from the Radio Harambe studios, through the magic of internet communication, is the co-director of the ARA Project, which is a project dedicated to the conservation of two of Costa Rica's native macaw species. Her name is Dr. Fernanda Hong. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
Greetings, Mr. David. Thank you for having me in the program.
Now, I have the first thing we'll do before we get into sort of specifics on the project and what you guys do. Tell us a little bit about the birds that you guys work with and the dangers they face and that kind of thing. Just a kind of a primer on the species, if you can.
Okay, just kind of like a quick recap on the birds that we work here in our project. We concentrate mainly on the scarlet macaws and the great green macaws. They are native macaw species in Costa Rica. They used to be all over the country. They used to be widespread. Unfortunately, mostly due to deforestation and habitat loss, they've lost a lot of population. The population has declined. The biggest loser, unfortunately, in this game has been the great green macaw. It used to be very widespread, as I said, and unfortunately, right now we have around 230 or 300 individuals in the wild. Scarlet macaws are a little bit more holding on a little bit better. They have around two different populations in Costa Rica, but they number under 1,000 individuals, more or less.
200?
Yeah, the great green is right there in CITES I. It's in the appendix of one of the most endangered species, especially in Costa Rica. It's in the top 10.
Now, besides deforestation, isn't also the pet trade to do with some of this?
Yeah, Costa Rica unfortunately has a big rate of people that, at least there used to be a big tradition of having them as pets, and especially since they're so showy and they have such beautiful feathers. A lot of people want them as pets, and the illegal pet trade has a big impact on the populations.
Now, the scarlet macaw is, from the last I looked, and I was just kind of priming myself a little bit today, is not actually listed as endangered. Is that true?
It is in one of the appendices. They have different sort of classifications. The thing is that the scarlet macaw as a species is not that much endangered, but if you look at locally in Costa Rica, it is. So that's kind of like one of the differences that kind of comes up.
Now tell us a little bit about, specifically, I know one of the things you guys do is repopulation, or mm-hmm. what you're, you know, hoping to accomplish is repopulation. I mean, it seems like a kind of a cut and dry thing to say, but what does that mean, and how is that working? And, you know, that is the only way here, correct?
Well, a lot of people take different approaches to kind of saving the species or trying to preserve the species as much as it can be done. A lot of people, they focus more on trying to save the forest. And, you know, they say that unavoidably that's going to bring back the birds. And that is a valid approach, but I think it takes a little bit more time because you have to wait until the forest, you know, kind of recovers, etc. What we try to do is to just take birds that have been in houses, birds that have been pets, or birds that have been rescued, confiscated by the government, and we try to rehabilitate them. And if that's not possible, what we do is we make sure that their hatchlings are going to be the ones that are going to be free. So that's why our slogan is hatched to fly free.
Is the pet trade illegal?
Yeah, I mean, there are very few occasions in which a shelter actually has a permit to breed macaws, but they are usually for conservation purposes only. So at least in Costa Rica, I'm not sure how it would be in the States. At least in Costa Rica, it's illegal to basically just sell or buy a great green macaw.
And is there an industry that kind of revolves around doing that illegally? I mean, that seems to always be involved.
Yeah. unfortunately, in my country, at least, you could sell a great green macaw for like $3,000, and you can buy or sell a scarlet macaw for like $1,000. That used to be very popular, but there is a new law that is coming into action in my country now, and it has very big fines for people that are found with these birds. So if someone from the government comes up and they see that you have a scarlet or a great green macaw, they actually fine you like $2,000. So a lot of people are trying to get rid of their birds, unfortunately, because of that. So that's actually creating a pressure on the shelters also. So
it's
a bit complicated.
Do you work with all... Does the ARA project work at all with putting these birds into zoos and things like that?
Usually what we try to do is if the bird is, you know, there's no way to rehabilitate it and make it, you know, kind of introduce it back into the wild,
right.
we keep it as a breeding stock, as part of the breeding stock. There is a moment when even, you know, when we're just too full, so we have to figure out which other shelter can take it in the country.
Now, let's talk about the breeding process for a while, because this is the part that fascinates me, and this is the part that, let me admit, makes for the best photography that you guys put out. I mean, it's just
very,
some
very
gorgeous
very
pictures.
Exactly. Friendly, picture-friendly birds.
The process by doing this, I mean, what you're literally doing is breeding, if I understand what you're saying, you're literally breeding or getting hatchlings from rescued birds, mm-hmm. and then releasing them through what must be some sort of acclimation process into the wild. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Okay, so what we usually do if a bird is, we just deem that the bird cannot be released. We had a case of a bird that lost the wing, for example, and had only one wing. So it goes into the breeding program. What we do is we have a big flight we have a big flight in the breeding center, and we let them choose their partner, basically. And then what we try to do is for the birds to just raise the chicks all by themselves. We don't want to interfere. You know, we want to keep our interference as low as possible. So once they raise the chick and the chick has fledged, so we take it out and we put it in the juvenile aviary. And after that, once we choose a proper site for the bird, what we do is we proceed with a soft release program, which they just basically, we take the bird out to the release site and we let them kind of get used to the environment, get them used to the fruits and the natural foods that they're going to find there. And then we very softly and very patiently open, you know, one by one, open the cage and let the birds kind of like start getting used to the place, and then they finally fly out a little bit. Some hang around the cage, some decide to just fly off, so we always monitor them after we release them, and that's been, I think, one of the key reasons why our project has been so successful, because we've been keeping such a close look on all the birds.
What is the survival rate of these birds released into the wild?
So far, we've had a 90% survival rate.
Wow.
Which is we're very proud of that. We have a very high survival rate, and not only that, but we also have a very high breeding rate of the birds that have been released. So that is one of the things that we take a lot of care of, because there's no point if you release the bird but they're not breeding, you're not really helping out.
Right.
So.
And besides conservation and this kind of repopulation project, I also read on the website that you are actually a zoological institution, also a zoological park that people can visit.
Being a nonprofit organization, as every nonprofit organization, we struggle with, meeting budgets, et cetera, et cetera. So we've sort of resorted to tourism, and that helps out a lot, at least in Costa Rica, to also expose the project and the birds. And our mission to people, so that kind of makes us a lot closer. So we also have tours, we go around and people, we talk about them, we talk about the birds, conservation status, natural history, etc. So
this is a big operation.
It is pretty big, because we have 3 release sites in Costa Rica plus the breeding center. So we have 2 release sites in the Pacific and 1 in the Caribbean.
So there must be, tell me a little bit about the people who are involved in such a thing. This must be an incredibly eclectic group of folks.
in conservation, you get a lot of people from very different backgrounds. They're very, very motivated. And when there's a cause that calls them, a lot of people sort of come together that normally probably wouldn't. In our organization, there's around 3 biologists. I'm from Costa Rica. There's 2 biologists from New Zealand. There's another biologist from Holland. And there's the most of the staff that's from Costa Rica is from the board, basically. So we have a lot of people also from businesses and people who have experience in handling private organizations to kind of help us, organizing the whole budget and organizing mission statements, etc. So we're very, and of course we rely heavily on volunteers also. We've had volunteers from around 40 different countries, from Hungary, from Israel, all coming down here to Costa Rica to help out. So that is very, very inspiring always.
So let's talk about helping and what people can do. I mean, a lot of, we're a radio show focused on a specific, place, a specific animal park. And a lot of our people who listen are very interested in conservation and interested in animals and wildlife and everything that, that goes on in that process. So what can the average person do to help?
There's lots of ways that people can help. There's the simplest way, I guess, is going into our website, which is www.thearaproject.org, and we have ways of donating either by PayPal, or there's also a link through Rasu, and those are kind of like our biggest sort of international receiving sort of ways of getting money in. There's also volunteering. There's lots of people who come to Costa Rica and they volunteer. And also, it could be something as simple as, getting in contact with us and asking us, do we need pliers? Do we need leg bands? Do we need, for example, pelleted food? Is something that we could use a lot of, and just, people helping us out with that.
Costa Rica sounds like an amazing place for a wildlife enthusiast. It really does. It's one of those places that you just see so much about when it comes to just natural beauty and wildlife. And anyway, just thinking of those who might want to volunteer their time, it does seem like a great place to go.
Well, it is. It is actually, Costa Rica is tiny, so you can come here and you can look at things in a very short period of time. Our volunteers, I think, are up to a point very fortunate in the fact that the 3 release sites that we have, they're located in one of the most in the top 5 places that people like to visit here in Costa Rica. So at least in the Caribbean, they're right next to Puerto Viejo, which is a huge tourist center, and there's lots of nightlife and people come to the beach and it's beautiful. The same thing in Nicoya. So I think if they wanted to volunteer and kind of get to know the country, it's a pretty good opportunity.
Now, anything you're working on now you want to tell us about, the future, what we should be looking forward to, what can we expect to read about, that kind of stuff? I mean, what's on the plate now?
Right now, we are, unfortunately, we have our headquarters in Alajuela, which is kind of near to the capital. And the area has sort of turned a little bit kind of complicated in security issues. So we're trying to move to, we're trying to relocate to another site in Nicoya. And once we're there, we are planning on having, we have a small tourism center now, but what we're planning on ahead is having a full-on experience for people who visit us there. And what we're trying to do is just get, you know, the whole country together and get as much of our mission out as we can. We're also going to release birds in Nicoya also. And there's another great green release coming up also in, I think, in a couple of months. So,
and besides your website, people can find you. I know I see you on Facebook quite a bit.
Also in Facebook.
Yeah.
The Ara Project is, it's our Facebook.
And then one other thing I want to mention two things. First, before we wrap up here, you also have a Zazzle store.
Yeah.
which I bought a shirt from, and some of the designs in there. If you're a parrot person like I am, or a bird person like I am, they're gorgeous designs. Some of them are absolutely beautiful. So I do recommend you find that one. You find that store there.
We have also iPhone covers and all sorts of mouse pads, everything. So definitely something worth looking into.
And the final thing is, and this is kind of a strange question, but I'm just curious how you feel about it. You think we can win this?
I think we can. At least in my experience in my country, which is, you know, third world country, a little bit more complicated. Things are a little bit more complicated. The difference in perspective, the difference that has come as a general culture 10 years ago from now, it's amazing. Like, 5 years ago, nobody wanted to recycle. 5 years ago, nobody wanted to take care of rivers. And now I realize you see people actually really caring about, you know, those sort of issues, at least, you know, here in Costa Rica. And I think that first world countries like the U.S., for example, are huge supporters and they're huge role models for us also. And I think little by little, it's going to come together.
Listen, for all of us who, you know, have the pleasure of sitting comfortably in our houses and, you know, saying we can do what, you know, saying we would love to help in the best way we can. I just want to thank you guys, you specifically, and everybody who works with you guys for doing these kind of things. I mean, the world needs folks like you, and we can't thank you enough for the work you do.
No, at all. I think I've always said, you know, in conservation you see the worst in people, but you also see the best in people. And radio show, you know, radio talk shows like this and all of the sort of support that we get from people from the States, it's amazing. So actually you guys are a huge part of that effort as well.
So once again, the website is the Ara Project.
.org.
You can go there and donate, buy stuff, anything you need to do to help. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
No, thank you, David.
Take care now.
Okay, ciao. Bye.
Thank you once again for listening to Radio Harambe, and our sincere thanks to Fernanda Hong for joining us and telling us about the Ara Project and their continuing fight to save macaws. For more information and to make a donation, go to theara.org, theara.org. Or you can go to our site, jomboeveryone.com, click the conservation page, and you'll find a link to their website there as well. Also, while you're at jomboeveryone.com, you'll find everything there is to know about Disney's Animal Kingdom, including reviews of attractions,
restaurants, shows, photo galleries. There's information about animals. Mike does Safari Mike column every week. And there's also links to our Facebook page and YouTube channel as well. You can find us both on Twitter. I am at Radio Harambe. Mike, they can find you...
At Jumbo Everyone.
At Jumbo Everyone, where you have like 40,000 followers now, right?
I have like 2,300, something like that.
I have a lot fewer than that.
Well, you have to remember, I've tweeted somewhere in the neighborhood of 22,000 times. That's not kidding.
I'm nowhere near that.
When you tweet that many times, you sort of, I don't know. I think if you're out there a lot on Twitter, people kind of will follow you. I don't think it has anything to do with me personally or my boyish good looks. I think it's just the fact that I'm constantly annoying people on Twitter and making snarky comments and all that kind of stuff.
Excellent.
People follow me.
So follow him at Jumbo, everyone, and you'll get to have all that fun on Twitter. Don't forget about our conservation store. I have my Not a Half Day Park t-shirt ready for my trip to the Animal Kingdom, which I plan on wearing while I'm there. Half the park. Did you?
Absolutely.
You got a Not a Half Day Parker?
I have a Not a Half Day Park. Excellent. I have a John Wolverine one with the rhino.
Yep.
And I have the one that just has the, you know, save off, you know, the five, the people that we, you know, the five different animals that we have on our website, including obviously the macaws from the Arrow Project. You know, we went to the Animal Kingdom 4 different days. So I wore my shirt one of those days, you know, each of those 3 days. And then for my 4th day, I wore my snow leopard conservation shirt, which, of course, Joe Rohde's heavily involved with. So I was out there supporting every time I was at the
Animal Your human billboard.
Exactly.
And just so you know, folks, we are actually presently working on a Radio Harambe line of stuff. Maybe a few more weeks before it's done, but we are actually in the design process of a new logo that we will hopefully have to announce to you before the holidays. So stay tuned for that. We donate half the profits of all of everything we make from the conservation store to our conners. You can find all of that stuff at zazzle.com/jumboeveryone. Again, you can find links to that on jumboeveryone.com as well. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, rate us, and leave a review there as well. It really does help us to get the word out. You can also listen to us on Stitcher and Podbean. So, Mike, I am off. And we will not have a show next week because I will be in an undisclosed location.
Will there be any mice there?
Will there be any what?
Mice?
Not so sure yet.
Any ducks?
Might be ducks.
Any giant dogs that talk?
I hope. I that would be cool if there was. So we won't be here next week, so check out for the week after that. I know we have some great stuff planned coming up. We'll actually probably do some trip report stuff too as well from the last couple of trips. So for Safari Mike, I'm Dave McBride. Guaharini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Quaku,